Well, good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Janice M., and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Today is Monday. It is July 4, 2016. Today we're reading from the Big Book in Chapter 6, Into Action. And we're on page 77. We're going to begin reading that last paragraph under No Conditions. Today's readers are, for the OA 12 Steps, Edith R., the 12 OA Traditions would be Anita L., and the readers for the text today are Helena R., and Lisa H., and Camilla G. Now, the reference number for yesterday's Sunday special edition of July the 3rd, 2016 is 8884. Presentation entitled The Road to Recovery. The OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's tradition, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Edith R. to please read OA's 12 steps.
Good morning, everyone. This is Edith R., a recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do this service path.
And thank you so much, Edith R. Thank you. Okay, now I will kindly ask Anita L. to please read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, everybody. This is Anita L. from outside Philadelphia. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Just one sec. Sorry. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks, and I pass.
And thank you. Thank you, Anita L. How our meeting works. If we could just kindly all mute our line so that we can have a nice, clear recording. And I thank you. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, you press star 1 to unmute. But once you are done sharing, please let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. pardon me. Today we resume our study in the Big Book on page 77, and we're going to start on the last paragraph on page 77. I will now ask Helena R. to please begin reading.
Good morning. This is Helena. Page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. So just quickly a reminder that the person we're not criticizing, they're talking about at the very beginning of this, is the person that we've had a former ill feeling toward, and they're mentioned as enemies. I'm just going to focus on this second paragraph that I read, that we really don't know what's going to happen, and that in most of the time it says we will have positive results, and that on the other hand, if we do not have positive results as we're making our step nine amends, it's not the ultimate goal. Remember, on page 77 at the top, it says that although at the moment we're trying to put our lives in order, the real purpose is, quote, to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And it's also in that first paragraph mentioned that we are to be calm, frank, and open. And it says, if our manner is calm, frank, and open, then most of the time, 9 cases out of 10 has been the experience of these 100, first 100, is that feuds of years standing melt away, that the unexpected can happen, that people, for the most part, will appreciate what we're trying to do. So I really don't have much more to say about it. I do just want to point out that at the end of the section in this chapter on how to go about making amends, page 83, it says, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And so here we are. If we have done that, we have made our demonstration, we have done our part, and the reaction of the other person, assuming that we have been calm, frank, and open, and that we have been sensible, tactful, and considerate, not servile or scraping, then we have done our part, and anything that happens as a result of that is up to God and up to the other person. Pass.
And thank you so much, Helena. Okay, we're going to focus on that first paragraph on page 78 in 9 cases out of 10. So who would like to comment for about 3 minutes on what was read?
Katie G. from Boston.
Yeah, good morning, Katie G. Okay, Katie G. and anyone else?
Melissa C.
Of course. Anybody else?
Marie V.
Marie Z.
Yes.
Okay.
Vasa O. I don't know if you heard me, Vasa O.
Oh, I didn't hear you, Vasa O. So
thank
I'm
you,
hon. You're welcome. I'm going with that four. So that we're going to have Katie G up. Please go ahead, Katie.
Good morning, Janice. May I be heard?
You sure can.
Good morning, everyone. This is Katie G., recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic and bulimic, calling in from Boston. Let me set my timer. So, you know, when I first started this, and I can hear you whipping your eggs or your coffee. I'd love you to mute. That's cool. So when I first started making, when I went through my first round of amends 8 years ago, I started off with very like low hanging fruit. So the people that were easy to approach, and I got a lot of positive feedback and I started feeling really good. And feeling really good can kind of be a bad thing for me because the amends started going to my head and it became the Katie G show. And I wanted everyone to see like, I'm Katie G and I am making amends and aren't I so great? And then I had, and I've shared some, you know, not so successful stories. And what I think for me, the most important thing about amends that we're talking about is change behavior. And then it's not about the outcome, right? It's about my willingness to show up. And it took me 5 years to make an amend to my mom. And then when I did kind of make my first amend to her, it was after a huge verbally expressive battle when she came to my graduation from graduate school. In my most recent amend, with my fiance, I had to, I made an amend, and then during the amend, I had to pause and ask God for guidance and direction because I had to make an additional amend because he pointed out that something I had done was disrespectful to him in my amend process in terms of making financial reparations and not considering him. So it really is about keeping that connection open with God and not being so much in the outcomes business. Like I'm not going to people because I'm so great. I'm going to people because I've made mistakes. And I really need to change my behavior, and that the outcomes don't matter. And you know, I really can have a hard time with that because I want. And somebody is still unmuted. If you don't mind muting, that'd be great.
Katie, I'm gonna mute the line. Katie, excuse me for interrupting.
You.
Okay. Okay, we need to unmute Katie. Katie's the only one that's unmuting at this time. Go ahead, hon. Go ahead.
Okay, Janice, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, I'll just wrap up because I've said enough. But I just think it's really about restoring the harm. It's about being willing to do things differently. And then, you know, the most important stuff is my day-to-day willingness to be a changed woman, to shut my mouth when that resentment comes up, because I don't want to keep doing the same amend over and over again, because that's not an amend, that's an apology. That's what I used to do, and today it's about being changed. And I'm going to keep walking this bumpy, wonderful road with you all a day at a time, and remembering, too, that I need to practice the willingness to be uncomfortable, to hear uncomfortable feedback, which comes from the ability to not seek relief, but seek freedom. And the only time I find freedom is when I pause and sit with God and don't seek, you know, outside relief. And with that, I do pass.
And thank you so much, Katie G. Okay, Melissa C., it's your turn. Start.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Good morning. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. You know, under no conditions do I criticize such a person or argue. I sweep off only my side of the street. I don't tell others what they should do. I don't discuss others' faults. And, you know, and I look at others with that critical eye. That was my perfect way to excuse my own bad behavior, thinking about how I would look for any way to weasel myself out of accountability. You know, it's easier that way. Find fault in them, shift the blame, never really own up, don't change, you know, and then keep eating, because that's where this leads to. You know, and so my ultimate goal, is not to change other people. It's not even to change the situation. It's so that I can stop eating and remain stopped from eating compulsively. You know, that's why I started on this, was that I had an addiction to food that was killing me, and I agreed that I would do anything to remedy that. And so that means I'm no longer committed to being right. You know, even today, I can believe right down to the very core that I'm right about something. So what? You know, where is that going to get me? Arguing or even remaining bound to my viewpoint, you know, somehow that's a belief that I'm God, that I know better. And the reality is I don't even know how much food to put in this mouth. So who am I to think that I know better about any situation? My goal is to stay free from eating compulsively and to be of service. That's really it. Not to sway anybody's opinion, not even to get anybody to forgive me. I have to live in peace. And so I need to clean up only my side. You know, I don't tend to verbally tell people how wrong they are, because I've got really good manners. I learned that. You can hear my sarcasm. But I could do it mentally. You know, I could look at somebody and be extremely critical And then excuse the way that I behave based on how they behave. And that's not what this is about. I take care of my side of the street. I make sure that I'm engaging in a way as much as I can that's free, that I don't have to feel like crap about myself anymore. And so I don't have to be, I'm not on the committee of judging other people and knowing what's best. I just keep what I do clean, you know, and thank you. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Melissa C. Just a reminder, we're going to be focusing on the first paragraph on page 78. Okay, Marie Z, it is your turn. Star one to unmute.
This is Marie V. Can you hear me?
Hey, Marie V, I can.
Okay, good morning to everybody, and thank you for your service. The first paragraph on 78, 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Years of feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. I had the experience, probably my biggest resentment was my mother, and I was so angry at her for so many reasons, and one Sunday afternoon, she got sick, and I went to take her to emergency, and she had nothing but, like, flu symptoms, you know, and suddenly her system started shutting down, and something told me I better make amends to this woman, and I owed her many. And I did. I made the amends. And I started off by telling her I was so sorry for the years that I mistreated her, that I cussed her out, that I took her out of my house screaming and yelling like a maniac because I was on amphetamines, you know, and I was crazy out of my mind. And she unexpectedly said to me, "You have nothing to be sorry for. You were always a good daughter. You have always been there for me. And if you treated me badly, chances are I had it coming," which was a real shock because I never expected that from her because she was always the opposite. She always went against whatever I said. And what's amazing about it is that the next day she died. And I always remember that because it's like she let me off the hook. She forgave me. She forgave me. And I mean, there were many ugly scenes where I cursed her out and chased her out of my house. I didn't want anything to do with her. I wanted her out of my life. And she forgave me. So all those years of my anger at her melted away when she forgave me. So the unexpected does happen. You know, it really does. This program works. When you least expect it to work, it does. God provides us with the power. If we live these steps, He takes over and He does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Thank you for allowing me to share.
And thank you for your share, Marie. Okay, we have Vasa O, please. Vasa, it's your turn.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Janice, for your service. And I'm Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. Yes, I didn't have a lot of resentment, but whatever I had, there were very, very big resentments. Again, it was towards my father, my mother, my oldest brother. Most of my stuff was done in my head, you know, mental resentments. I wasn't a person that would take, you know, rebellions and stuff like that because I was just so afraid. I didn't want to hurt people. I didn't want them to hurt me back, retaliate back. But anyways, I remember thinking Sometimes the man we are calling upon amid his faults of feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. And again, for me, the resentment was gradually, I wasn't freed from it right away. The more I was going through the steps, the more I heard and the more I healed. I remember, writing letters, and I remember doing face-to-face, and I remember doing over the phone. But the most one but it was good size of a resentment I carried against my older brother. And he did come to OA for a few times, and he knew what resentments were. And I made up, I told him how I regretted calling him names. And he made big resentment too. He says, Vasa, we did a lot of mistakes as growing up. I need to make amends to you and my other brothers too. So it just melted right then. We became the best friends, and he died like 3 or 4 months ago. And this was like 29 years ago when it happened. And it's just amazing how things can just melt away. But going and saying to people, if I don't make my amends, then I'm going to eat. They don't understand. I mean, to say, I'm not going to drink, it's much more serious thing. Drugging, but food is just, people are so surrounded with food and they don't think it's a problem. Most people don't think it's a problem. They look at me like I'm crazy, It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what people think. I need to do it for myself, I was set free with my father. My father was alive for another 15 years. I was in recovery. My behavior changed towards him. I started feeling like I used to think he was my enemy. He tried to harm me, and there was a lot of harm done as growing up. I'll just wrap it up. He meant well and for so many things. So thank you for letting me share, and I pass. Must be my time. Thank you, and I pass.
Okay. Thank you so much, Vasa. Okay. Who else would like to comment for about 3 minutes on that first paragraph on
this
page
78? Beverly, yes. From Pennsylvania.
Beverly. Bev, what's your first initial to your last name?
B as in boy.
Okay, Beverly B. Whom else would
Reva
like
P.
to? Reva P. And next. Anyone else? All right, let's go with Beverly B. Please go ahead, Beverly.
And Beverly B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater. I'm very grateful to be on the line this morning. It's been quite a while, and I love the big book study. And I really love how it says we will be gratified with the results. And some of the reminders that I'm being reminded of today is that all the ill will that I had towards others, it poisoned my heart and my relationships with others, and that every day that I'm abstaining from compulsive overeating, I'm making an amends to myself, and that I really do love, and how my sponsor and sponsors have given me step-by-step directions to pray before I went and pray after, and that it wasn't about them, it was me, that I had to repay losses that I had done, money amends and different amends, and I didn't have the right to my peace of mind at another's expense, and today that is so loving for me, and that's why I need the reminders every day to continue. And it says we go to our former enemies, sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. And, I had a lot of ill feelings against others, that hate and that resentment. I mean, resentments, I was like rageful. And only until I did it could today I have peace of mind around family members, around the dead and the deceased in my life. And that I'm really grateful that the benefits of making amends from the past, and that I can live in today, and freedom. Freedom comes from practicing these steps, and I just love it. And So I'll go with that. I'll just mute and pass with a lot of gratitude. Thank you.
And thank you, Beverly B., so much for sharing. Okay, Reva P., it is your turn.
Good morning. This is Reva P., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Toronto. I wanted to share on the last sentence that we've made our demonstration, done our part, and it's water over the dam. That reminds me that I'm responsible for the effort, and I'm not responsible for the outcome. So I've got to watch the expectations, which sometimes I'm not even aware that I have. And it's about my actions and behaviors more than the words that I say, because it's easy to say I'm sorry, and it's a lot harder to change my behavior. So recently I've been doing, you know, the big amends way back when I did the first set of inventory work were quite positive, but lately I've been doing the living amends with my husband, my son, my mother, most I think those the most, and I really have to watch the unexpected happens, because I still have a lurking notion in the back of my mind that if I change for the better, that people will change too. And you know what? They don't. And it's uncomfortable. But when I've gotten to this point in the inventory process where my behaviors are so objectionable, and I've asked God to remove them, and I'm willing to change for the better, I'm willing to go through this discomfort of seeing that, you know, I can change myself, but I can't change anybody or anything around me, because I don't have that power. And just to put out there that it's not always so comfortable, it's not always like this amazing white light experience, but I do it anyway, because I will go to any lengths to not go back to where I was. And I don't want to be that mother, wife, daughter. I want to be the person that God envisions me to be. So it might be a bit of discomfort till I get to the other side and the new behaviors are more comfortable or more of a habit, but it's part of the process, and that's what I do. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
And thank you so much, Reva P. I didn't know if that was her line or what. I'm going to just share for a minute or so. My name is Janice M., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph. It says, in 9 cases out of 10, okay, being a former gambler, 9 times out of 10, that's 90%. That's pretty good odds to be 90% that we will be gratified. We will be, it will be unbelievable. You know, what I thought, how I thought and how I think and what the conclusion that I thought would happen does not happen. It didn't happen for me. That's my experience when I did this step. And then, of course, you know, I went in well prepared as I could be for the day, because I went in not alone. I went in with my higher power, and being prepared with my sponsor prior to even going in, I had some security, you know. I wasn't alone. I wasn't alone with Janice and thinking of all the results. And it says here, it says, rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Golly, where did we hear that before? Really do we fail? That means hardly ever. You know, hardly ever are we unsatisfactory? Do we make unsatisfactory progress? That we will come out so much better than when we went in. And then our former enemies, you know, will praise us. I didn't expect that. I expected the worst because queen of negativity, you know. But again, the purpose here is for me. The one goal, the one purpose, the one aim was to be free from what? From guilt that I was holding, from the resentments, from the fear, from the shame, from the remorse. Okay? Whatever happens as a result of this is up to God. I don't give the outcomes. God does. And you know, what has done, at least I did my part. What was already done is done. We cannot change it. That's water over the dam. Okay, is there anybody else that wants to share on this before we go on?
Matt M.?
Matt M., please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, fellow visualists. This is Matt M., compulsive overeater from New Jersey. This step is very important for me because last time I was going through the steps, I was working on my step 9, I picked up because I was afraid of what some of the people I was going, who I was going to approach, what they were going to do. But it's not about that. You know, this is a very serious step. If I fail to enlarge my spiritual life or fail to go to the people that I owe an amends to, especially two that I have on my list, I just did my fifth step yesterday, finished it up, then I'm going to pick up again. It basically says that, you know, I have to be willing to go to any lengths, and I have to be willing to put down my pride and to listen to what people have to say. And again, it's not about them. It's about me. I have to clear away my side of the street. It doesn't matter what their reaction is. What matters is the fact that I have to put 2 feet forward and try. I'm very lucky that I finally see that, because no amount of food is ever going to fix what's between my ears. No amount of wishing things to go away is going to help me. I just need to put my, like I said, my best foot forward, do the best that I can, and approach these people with kindness, you know, say the sick man prayer, you know, if they do reject me, because, again, it's about me trying to clear my way to the path, not about them, and with that, I'll pass.
All right, thank you, Matt M. If there isn't anyone else, I think we'll go on with Lisa H. on that second paragraph on page 78, please. Star 1 to unmute.
Good morning. This is Lisa H., recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us, arranging the best deal we can to let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. It was interesting as I was thinking about owing money, you know, when I was actively in my disease of compulsive overeating, it wasn't a tremendous amount of money I spent. I was really good at hiding all the evidence, and I would gain weight, and then my husband would look at me and think, how are you gaining weight? How are you gaining weight? You don't eat that much. So I was really good at hiding those things. But in this paragraph, what it says to me is that the one line that says arranging the best deal we can to let these people know we are sorry, because really the biggest financial that amend that I had to make was to my spouse. I was a stay-at-home mom, and it was a little bit like I used money the way I used food. You know, I would spend money, purchase things to make myself feel better, to not feel the feelings, you know, the food. And I also, I mean, realized this much later that I used money in the same way. And so my amends, my financial amends, the biggest financial amends has been to my spouse. And it's living amends, because it's something I have to do on a regular basis. It's something I have had to change my behavior around money. You know, now as we're in our later years, we don't have a lot of financial worries. But when I was really in the disease, you know, sometimes money was tight. So I think that this, I'm faced with this on a daily basis, and really only with the help of my higher power, a lot of times bringing it to my awareness, is this something that I want? Am I trying to spend money to make myself feel better? Or is it something that's really necessary? Anyway, thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you so much, Lisa H. Okay, who would like to share on this second paragraph?
Nessa R.
Okay, I hear Nessa R.
Carol K.
Virginia.
Carol K. I hear Virginia.
Yes.
Virginia, what's your first initial of your last name?
C.
Okay, I hear Virginia C. Next. All right, we'll go with those three. Nessa R., you're up, my dear.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Vision for You. My name is Nessa R., a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. What are we trying to do? So what are we trying to do? I'm trying to get right with God because that is my solution. My solution is living a life where my will is aligned with God's will. And I cannot set things right with God unless I set things right with my fellows first. And although I know this paragraph deals strictly with restitution, you know, with financial amends, this really applies to everything. I cannot ask God to forgive me, to say I'm sorry to God for the harms that I have done others. I have to set those right first. You know, and that is the goal. The goal is to unblock myself from God because He is my solution. You know, we've learned that in step two. And if I don't unblock myself from God, I have a warning here. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So if I don't make my amends, I am remaining blocked from my solution. And if I'm blocked from my solution, that puts me closer to the next compulsive bite. And we know how well that worked for me as a solution to my problems. The solution here is God. We have to really remember this. What are we trying to do? You know, we're not trying to win a popularity contest. We're not trying to shy away from discomfort, which, you know, making amends can be quite uncomfortable. You know, I'm trying to reach a permanent, workable solution that will keep me away from the food, and I pass.
Well, thank you, Nessa. Okay, Carol K., it is your turn.
Hi, this is Carol K. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, as far as amends goes, this is a really hard one for me because, you know, I knew it all. I knew everything, and I was always right, and everybody else was always wrong. So when I was going through the fourth step with my sponsor, you know, God bless her because I was a tough one. I was a tough nut to crack. Because I was just seeing everybody else's and what they did. And even after writing everything down, I still saw it was them and not me. And then I finally got it. And the reason is this. I would have done anything, and to this day I still will, to be connected to my higher power. And I knew that this was something I had to do. And I just prayed and prayed. And I finally saw my own part in this. You know, the biggest person that I had to make an amends to was my husband because financially I have destroyed my family. It's that simple. We're still trying to catch up on bills and everything else. You know, I would play with the mortgage money all the time. I'd say, well, you know, I have 3 months because they can't start foreclosure for 3 months. So I would continue ordering out my binge food, not giving a shit. You know, the water would get shut off, and I'd be like, oh, well, I'll have it turned on next week. Oh, I wasn't stupid. I had all this down pat in my head when my husband got paid. So, you know, I always played with the money. But then I'd wait until it was just about 3 months where the mortgage was behind, and then I'd make one payment. And I did this for years while I was in the food. And my life was miserable. It was, you know what? I got to say this. The last thing I have to say is, I have a fear of picking up. And you know what? For me, that's an excellent fear because I should be fearful to pick up again because I know the life I have now, which I have an excellent relationship with my husband and all my kids. I made amends to everybody. Thank you, God, they all accepted because I'm not too sure if I was them, I would have accepted. Not only did I screw us up financially, but I hurt my husband in other ways. I went on a diet, Jenny Craig. I lost over 100 pounds. I was in my late 30s. I thought I was hot stuff, God's gift to all men. And I went out there, and I was disloyal to my husband. And so did I screw up my life? I did. This disease got me good. And let me tell you something. Whatever it takes for me to stay out of this disease, I'm going to do it. If my sponsor tells me, go out in the dog run and eat up the dog turd, I'm going to do it. Because you know what? I don't ever want to go back there again. I don't want to hurt these people anymore. These are the people I love, and I don't ever want to hurt anybody ever again in my life. And whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. Thanks for letting me share. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah, and thank you so much, Carol Kay. Okay, Virginia C., it's your turn.
Hi, this is Virginia C. from New York. I just, you know, we're talking about financial amends, and I wanted to share my story around my financial amends, and that was that when I did my inventory, it turned out I figured out I owed about $6,000 in financial amends, all from stuff I had, from money I had stolen before the age of 18, all as a teenager, from parents, employers, et cetera. And so I kind of hemmed and hawed about, oh, that's a lot of money, and where am I going to get this from? I mean, I had it kind of, but I didn't want to take it out of my emergency savings. And so I took a few months kind of thinking about it. And I work in an industry where we get a yearly bonus every year in February. And my bonus has been pretty, you know, stable throughout, you know, the last several years. And the year that I need to make my financial amends, I received an award, a special award from a client that I've been this company 17 years. I'd only received that award that one year and have not received it again since. And it was an award for $10,000. And after taxes, $10,000 on a bonus is about exactly $6,000. And so I took that $6,000 and I made my financial amends. And I know that that was not a coincidence. That was divine guidance. That was God showing me, here is the money. Here is the money. You need to make these amends so that you can get on with your life. And I just, you know, I tell, whenever anyone tells me they're afraid about making financial amends, I just say, just have the willingness to make them and God will provide the resources. And so I just thank you for letting me share. With that, I'll pass.
And thank you so much, Virginia C. Okay, we still have time for a couple. Okay, if you please would mute your phone because we can still hear you. Anybody else would like to comment on this? I'm going to mute the line. I'm going to mute the line for us. Let me see now. Okay, it's all muted, so whom else would like to share on this paragraph? Star 121 mute.
Minky W.
Vicky W.
No, Minky W.
Minky W, okay, anybody else?
Kim G.
Kim G. Okay, let's go with those. How about one more? Well, let's go with those two. Minky W., please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. This is Minky W. from New York. Grateful to be here. So my ninth step amends, I was so scared when I wrote my eighth step. I said, I'm never going to go through with these nine steps. I can't. It's too hard for me, and I'm going to say all the wrong words, and I can't go through. I can't do the ninth step. And my sponsor really helped me and guided me, and you know, I wrote out a script before that so that I don't hurt people even more by making my amends. And surprisingly enough, all the amends went over well. And it was so freeing, and I was able to live with myself and, as they promised, look other people in the eye. And you know, in terms of financial amends, it took me a really, really long time to pay everybody back, and I'm still working on it. But each person that I owed money, and sometimes it was just as little as, you know, $20 a month, and by the time the loan was paid off, or after the debt, or whatever, or, you know, the money that was, whatever it was, each one was so freeing. I was like, I felt like I was like on a high. It was like God was with me. And, you know, I had some people that said, nah, you don't have to pay me back. But I knew between me and God and my higher power that I need to do this for myself and for my higher power. And I just went and continued doing one amend after the other. And I'm grateful that this doesn't have to be done in one day. It's okay not to, you know, kind of like push it off because, you know, just because you're afraid or whatever, but just to do it slowly and carefully so that I don't hurt other people and that I don't hurt my finances in the process and hurt, you know, the people who live close to me. So for that, I'm grateful, and I'm so grateful to everybody on the line. With that, I pass.
And thank you so much, Minky W. Okay, Kim G., it's your turn.
Good morning, Janice. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G., and we must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we're liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. You know, at least for me, I see five times in this big book that during this ninth step that it's telling me I'm going to eat again if I don't do these amends. But with this specific warning, it's not telling me that owing the money is going to make me eat again. It's the fear of the creditors. It's the fear of not facing these people. So that's why I needed to make these amends. You know, I worked at a 7-Eleven in college, and my boss and taught me how to steal. You know, he was a very unscrupulous man, which I didn't realize at the time because I was only 18. But he taught us, you know, if you want a hoagie, just backdate it 2 days and put it in the write-off bin, and you can have your hoagie. If you want a candy bar, just rip off the wrapper and put it in the write-off bin, and, you know, you could have your candy bar. And every time I was in a nine-step meeting and I would think about that, I think I'd owe an amends. And every time I talked to someone, they tell me, oh, you don't owe an amends because you didn't steal anything. Your boss told you to do it. But that angst was what was eating away at me. So when I went through this big book method and I put aside what my boss told me and I looked where I was selfish, where I was dishonest, where I was self-seeking and I was frightened, I saw that I knew it was wrong and I still did it. I saw how self-seeking was. Well, everyone else is getting free food. I'm going to get free food. And I saw now that fear was going to make me eat again. So when I looked at how can I restitute that harm, because I didn't owe money to 7-Eleven. I didn't owe money to my boss because he did tell me it was okay. And what I wound up doing was a few years ago during the recession was really bad, is I donated a bunch of food to a food bank because I needed to replace that food regardless if it was quote-unquote right or wrong according to my boss. And I have to tell you now, one of the things that I do is every month, at one paycheck a month, I donate food to that food bank because I have stolen a lot of food from the universe, whether it was right or wrong, whether the babysitter told me it was okay, I could eat whatever I wanted, and I ate them out of house and home, and they told me it was okay. So what I had to recognize was I had to right the wrong of where I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And if I wasn't going to do that, it was my fear of the creditor. It was my fear that I was going to drink again. And it didn't matter whether other people told me I owed the amends or not. It didn't matter for me personally. The other formats I did, which told me it was okay because my boss said it was okay. It was how it sat with me. And I could not sit in that fear and resentment without eating again. And that is why I had to make an amends according to what my higher power told me. And with that, I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Kim G. Okay, we have about a minute. Does anyone want to share on this paragraph for a minute? Or two? No one else? All right. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you to everyone who has shared and who are listening. Please join us in the Serenity Prayer. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164. Followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Carmela G. please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Go ahead, Carmela.
Hi, this is Carmela G. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great gift for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.